Okay, so we're diving into a case today, Merit Music Service Incorporated versus Sunborn
Yep, back in 1967.
from 1967, a Maryland Court of Appeals case. And this one is fascinating. It really digs into what happens when you sign a contract but you don't read it.
A tale as old as time.
Yeah, exactly. And what happens when you end up in court over it? So we've got all the details, the facts of the case, the legal arguments, all that good stuff. And of course, we always try to highlight things that are particularly interesting for law students out there. So today, your mission, if you choose to accept it,
Is to become contract law experts.
yeah, well, maybe not experts, but at least to really get a grasp on some of the core principles that this case brings up, specifically that idea that you're responsible for what you sign, even if you didn't read it, and also the defense of unconscionability that sometimes comes up in contract cases.
Right.
All right, so let's set the scene here. The Sunborns, they're running a tavern,
Right.
and they already owe some money to Merit Music.
They did. They needed a loan, a $1,500 loan to relocate their business as part of an urban renewal project. And Merit Music said, hey, we'll give you the loan, but
There's a but. There's always a
there's
but.
a catch.
Yeah.
It wasn't a straightforward loan. They wanted a security interest in the Sunborn's liquor license, and they also wanted the exclusive right to install and operate a jukebox and other amusement machines in this new tavern.
So basically guaranteeing them some revenue. All
Exactly.
right, so that's the initial setup. But here's where things get really interesting. So at first, the Sunborns, they signed some loan documents, and their attorney is actually present for that. But then later that same night, a representative from Merit Music comes back with another contract. And this is where things go a little sideways. The Sunborns signed this second contract without actually reading it. They just assumed it was more paperwork related to the loan that they had just secured. Yeah, you think, oh, I just signed all this stuff, it must be the same. But this was a big mistake. This new contract had some pretty tough clauses in it. There were minimum revenue guarantees that the Sunborns had to pay to Merit for those machines that were installed.
Oh.
And there was also an exclusivity clause, meaning they couldn't have any other amusement machines from other companies in their tavern.
Right, so they were locked in with Merit.
Totally locked into Merit. So, of course, as you can imagine, this leads to some conflict. Later on, Merit tries to enforce these terms. They actually go to court and seek an injunction to stop the Sunborns from using any equipment from other companies.
Oh, wow.
And they also wanted financial damages because they claim the Sunborns had breached this new contract. The Sunborns, though, they fought back hard. They said, wait a minute, we had no idea about these terms in the second contract. And what's more, this contract is totally unfair, especially that minimum guarantee clause. They argued it was unconscionable. Now, the trial court surprisingly sided with the Sunborns. The judge dismissed Merit Music's complaint and said that the minimum guarantee clause was indeed unconscionable and the whole contract was invalid. But then,
Comes the twist.
here comes the appeal.
Dun dun dun.
The Maryland Court of Appeals steps in and they reverse the trial court's decision. So that's really what we want to unpack today. Why did the higher court overrule the lower court and decide to uphold this contract? So it really all comes down to this: can you get out of a contract just by saying, oh, I didn't read it? The court had to really grapple with this idea of freedom of contract, which basically means people should be free to enter into agreements as they choose,
Right.
versus this need to protect people from contracts that are just wildly unfair or oppressive.
Absolutely.
So it's a balancing act, and this case really highlights that. So the Court of Appeals, their reasoning was actually pretty interesting, and Judge Finan, who wrote the opinion, laid it out really well. There were three key pillars to their decision. The first was this idea of a presumption of knowledge. Basically, they're saying when you sign a legal document, it's assumed that you understand what's in it,
Makes sense.
unless you can prove something like fraud or duress or a mutual mistake. And that wasn't really the case here.
Right. They didn't prove any of that.
Not convincingly, no. And to make matters worse for their argument, the Sunborns themselves, they admitted that they could read and that they had average intelligence.
Right, so that doesn't help.
Not really helping their case. So the court's basically saying, you could have read it, you should have read it, and now you're bound by it.
And that brings us to the second point, which is the experience of the parties involved.
Right. Let's
Rocky.
talk about that. So the court pointed out that the Sunborns weren't exactly new to the business world. In fact, and this is a pretty important detail, they had actually sued Merit Music before.
Oh, wow.
So they had prior dealings with this company.
Interesting.
And not only that, they were running a business, they had experience.
Yeah.
So the court basically said, because of all this, you should have been even more careful.
Right. You would think.
You would think, They should have been more careful, not less careful, when signing this agreement with the same company that they had already had legal issues with.
Right.
So this raises a really interesting question, especially for law students out there.
Right.
How much does your past experience or your general understanding of business influence your responsibility when you enter into a new contract?
It's a good question. And it seems like in this case, the court put a lot of weight on the Sonneborn's past experience.
Yeah, they definitely considered it a significant factor. Now, the third key point that the court focused on was this idea of unconscionability.
Right.
So remember, the trial court said that the minimum guarantee clause was so unfair that it made the entire contract invalid. But the Court of Appeals disagreed. They said, look, just because a contract has some harsh terms or terms that seem really unfavorable to one party, that doesn't automatically mean that the whole thing is unconscionable and can't be enforced.
Right.
They made it clear that proving unconscionability is a pretty high bar. You typically have to show two things. One, you have to show that the process of bargaining was unfair. This is what's called procedural unconscionability.
Yeah.
And two, you have to show that the terms themselves are so ridiculously unfair or oppressive that they would shock the conscience of the court. And that's called substantive unconscionability.
Right. You need both of those.
You generally need both. In the Sonneborn case, even though those minimum guarantees were probably a pretty bad deal for the Sonneborns, the court didn't think there was enough evidence of procedural unconscionability.
So the way the contract was formed wasn't necessarily unfair.
Right. They didn't show that Merit had used some kind of shady tactics or pressure to force them into signing something they didn't understand.
Interesting.
And there's a really great quote from the court's opinion that kind of sums up their whole attitude. It says, "It is getting to be too common to have parties ask courts to do what they could have done themselves by reason of their own negligence."
Well, that's pretty blunt.
Yeah, they're not mincing words. It basically means the courts are saying, look, we're not here to bail you out of a bad deal just because you didn't bother to read what you were signing.
Right. You have a responsibility to understand what you're getting into.
Exactly. So what are some of the key takeaways here, especially for all the future lawyers out there who are listening? Well, one big one is the timing of when you get legal advice. In the Sonneborn case, they had their lawyer there for some of the initial paperwork, but not for that crucial second contract that had the minimum guarantee clause.
Right.
That's a big mistake.
It's huge.
This case really highlights how important it is to have a lawyer present before you sign any major agreement.
Absolutely. You don't want to just bring them in after the fact when there's already a problem.
Right. It's about prevention, not just damage control.
Right.
Another crucial point is documentation. Having a clear paper trail is so important. In some case, there were disagreements about when certain terms were added to the contract. If you've got good documentation of all the negotiations, the initial drafts, any changes that were made, and clear records of when everything was signed, it makes it so much easier to resolve disputes later on.
Absolutely. It removes a lot of the he said, she said kind of arguments.
Exactly. And of course, we talked about unconscionability. This case really emphasizes how difficult it is to use that as a defense in court. It's not enough to just say, oh, this contract is unfair. You have to show that the process was unfair and the terms themselves are outrageous.
Right. It's a high bar to clear.
Exactly. And this case is from 1967, but it's amazing how relevant the principles are even today. Think about all the online agreements that we click through without reading.
Every day.
All the time. Terms of service, privacy policies, software licenses.
Click.
We just scroll to the bottom and hit accept.
Right.
Courts still cite cases like Merit Music versus Sonneborn when they're dealing with these kinds of situations where someone says, oh, I didn't know what I was agreeing to.
Yeah, ignorance of the contract is not a good defense.
Nope, not usually. So to wrap this all up, what are some of the big takeaways here?
Well, I think it's clear that courts in Maryland, and really in many places, they hold people responsible for what they sign, even if they didn't read it carefully.
Right.
There are exceptions, of course, like if there's fraud or duress or a mutual mistake. Yeah. But just saying, oh, I didn't know what was in there, that's usually not going to fly.
It's really about personal responsibility.
Absolutely. And as we've seen, unconscionability is a tough defense to make.
Mm.
You need to show both an unfair process and really shockingly unfair terms.
So one final thought for everyone listening, especially all the law students. In a world where contracts are everywhere and they just keep getting longer and more complicated, who's really responsible for making sure that people understand what they're agreeing to?
That's a great question.
Is it all on the individual to read every single word, no matter how dense the legal language is?
Right.
Or do businesses and lawyers have a responsibility to make those terms clearer and more accessible? We know what the legal stance is. This case makes that pretty clear. But the ethical questions around all of this are definitely still evolving.
Definitely something to think about.
Definitely food for thought.